Hello, welcome. This is Between Two Worlds podcast. My name's Luke, and I'll be the host today. We got
host with the most.
Thanks, Dan. We got Dan here.
Yep.
And Ron's gone. I don't know where he is.
What happened?
I don't know. We got. We're moving on.
Isn't he? He's your dad.
Yeah, we're moving on.
Okay.
He's all gone. Right. He's done. All right. And we got Thalia.
Hello.
Thalia is
wow.
One of our pastors here at Northview. Mm-hmm. She does a lot of counseling.
Yep.
And deals with a lot of muck.
Yes, that's my word.
That's Thalia's word.
Yes.
If you talk with Thalia, you'll discover that you have a lot of muck in your life.
Yes, absolutely.
You might not think.
You might not think.
But after 5 minutes of Thalia, you will be convicted.
That you do have
just
muck in your life.
Get out the shovel. Yeah. Start working.
Yeah, so Thalia's going to help us out today talking about self-harm. Mm-hmm. And because you deal with hurting kids.
Yeah, I deal with a lot of parents that are working with this issue, but plus way back when I finished my counseling degree at Trinity, I started working in addictions and abuse and at mental health, especially with child and youth mental health, so teenagers, and cutting and self-harm were like a pretty common issue. Mm-hmm. So this is something that I've been working with for, I don't even know how long, 20 plus years, wow. 30 years, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So it's a comfortable topic for me. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And we're happy to have you as a resource.
Well, and we're very, very fortunate here at Northview to have,
Thalia
on staff. Just, I was going to say your years and years of experience with wisdom, but that makes you sound really old,
well,
so I don't want to do
am.
That.
Carter, that's our son. Yeah, a couple weeks ago, he said, "You're like the spiritual mother bird. Muck, 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 muck.
Is that what he said? Yeah. No. But so the parents that are listening realize that. Like, I mean, Luke and I, when we connect in with other youth pastors and stuff like that, and we're talking about the muck at our church. I mean, when I hear other youth pastors talk about the stuff they're having to deal with, it's scary because education-wise, we are nowhere near as equipped at all as Thalia is, of course. And so we're very, very fortunate. We're very blessed. And that's the first thing I always say to all these other youth pastors. I say, if you don't have a counselor on staff, you need to be connected, like
to someone,
at like where you can just
you
reach
just
up the phone
it
and
on. Let's keep going.
No, but seriously, I want parents to realize that, and I want
You know what I love is I love being my age now. I'm 48, and I love being a parent of like a 19 and 20 year old because I kind of feel like I've had a lot of experience in counseling, a lot of experience as a mom. It's like I can use that to my advantage.
Right.
Like I could not have done this job in the counseling if I had been in my mid-20s, late 20s. It's just not possible. You need to build up a level of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I might as well just own my age, own my stage of life, and just go for it. Be that spiritual mother bird.
Muck, muck, muck.
Muck, muck, muck.
All right.
Awesome. So we're going to start off with our classic, Here's the Thing. Ron's not here to rant about something that no one cares about. Dan, you want to rant about something that nobody cares about?
You know, no one cares about, you know, there's going to be people, you're going to get emails about this. You're going to get emails. People are going
to Dan, I don't get any emails.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Except for one time.
Here's the thing. U-turns.
Oh.
Now, Thalia, you said that. Now, what does that mean? Do you get offended by U-turns?
No, I wish we had actual U-turn capability.
Okay, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say, I was always one of those people, if I saw someone making a U-turn, that was like something against my soul. Like I would just be like, oh, look at that, kids. Look at that.
Well,
they are breaking the law. Hang on a sec. I'm in my mid-rant here, Thalia. You don't understand how this works. You have to let me go for a little bit. Okay.
So is he going to clear out his system? Is that what
I went down to California. We talked about Disneyland trip. We don't need to go on about that again. When I went to Disneyland in the fall, and we got a ride by, you know, the shuttle driver, and we come up to a light. And he goes, oh, and he points back and he goes, there's your hotel. And he does a U-turn. And I'm like, what is happening here? And then I would get out of there and I'm like, do I give this guy a tip? He just broke how many laws here in California, you know? I've seen like, like chips, you know, like highway patrol, they could come down on me here. Like, yeah. I don't know what's going to happen. So anyways, we get in the hotel, blah, 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 blah. We get a ride from someone else, you know, the other day, next day or whatever. And he does it too. Mm. And I'm like, what the heck? So I
it's
actually
common
said,
in the States.
I said to the fellow, I go, you know, one of the huge differences between us, between you guys and up in Canada where we're civilized is like, you can't do a U-turn. And he looked at me and he's like, what are you talking about? And then when I explained to him, he goes, oh, no. He goes, and he pointed out the sign where U-turn was permitted. Now, I want to tell you, even at that point, I was like, this is anarchy. Like, this is crazy. So, though, I rented a car for a day to take the family to the beach. And I did a U-turn.
Oh, wow.
Now, I'm going to tell you, when I first did it,
you felt wrong?
I felt naughty. Like, you know, like, I felt like, what is happening here? Like, this is, and my kids are like, dad. I'm like, it's okay. Just breathe in, breathe out. And I did it. And I tell you, after that first time.
You're addictive.
It was a slippery slope. I was like, but it was so, because especially driving where I didn't know where I was like, oh, I passed it. I'll do a U-turn.
I know. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. So, but I just never experienced before. So, Thayla, you have experienced the freedom.
Yeah, in the States. So, I was traveling for a conference down in Texas. Okay. And there's U-turn spots all over the place.
Yeah.
I was like, this is awesome. But here, like if you're in Abbotsford and you do a U-turn, it always wrecks traffic. So you're like putting your life on the line if you do that.
So now I actually understand a little bit more. Mm-hmm. If I see someone with a plate from the States and they do a U-turn, they're just like, well, you do a U-turn.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a U-turn the other day right off the McCollum exit, right off the roundabout, missed my exit. Did a U-turn right in the light. It was awesome.
You know, next time you have to do a roundabout rant. If you haven't done one, a roundabout rant is a worthwhile one.
My favorite, okay, really quick, my favorite roundabout, no, it's not a rant. My favorite one is when they first installed the one on Clearbrook Road. And the reality is, if you're someone of my mature age, you probably haven't driven a lot of roundabouts before when they were installed, right?
It's true.
But the thing is, coming up Clearbrook Road, after youth night, cleaned up, it's about like 10:15, 10:30, I'm driving up Clearbrook Road, there's no one on the road. Hit the roundabout, and there's a car going the wrong way.
Oh. On the roundabout?
On the roundabout. Oh. Did two circles.
No.
Yes, did two circles the wrong way. I'm just sitting there going, I'm not moving. So.
Is anyone else scared sometimes?
Terrified.
Just like, especially the high street one?
The McCallum one.
You think
because
that
one? Because there's like two roundabouts, and then you're like, which one do I get off to go to the highway to go home? I don't know which exit. Like, it's terrifying, that one.
We had friends, family members from England come, and they thought it was just hilarious because if you drive over there, of course, the roundabouts, it's like rally racing, right? And they're like, why are people stopping? Why are people slowing down? Just go, you know? So
we have one at the end of our cul-de-sac. So we're right in front of Claybrook
Middle.
That's
right. Yeah.
And nobody uses it properly. Yeah. It is horrible. And you can't even like go past like straight through without being partly on the roundabout. So it's kind of a disaster.
Oh,
anyway,
thanks, that was a longer here. The thing that was longer. Yeah, we segued in roundabouts there.
No,
yeah,
no, that's okay. Good. No, that's good.
That's good.
So again, we're gonna be talking about self harm. So Thayla, Dan, what are some warning signs with self harm? Like if your kid might be struggling with self harm, how would a parent know besides seeing the obvious injuries on the person?
Well, kids are pretty good at hiding stuff. I remember my kids being in middle school, a public school here in town, and they started saying, Mom, this kid is always wearing long pants and long sleeves, even in gym, and they refuse to wear like T-shirts in fantastic weather. Mm. And they're like, what's going on? I'm like, yeah, that's a sign that probably there's something going on. Maybe some cutting, maybe some scratching, something where they're hurting themselves, because why else would you cover up and keep your sleeves tight over your wrist all year long? But unfortunately, this culture, a lot of parents are working and they're unavailable, and so they don't necessarily notice the signs for quite a while, because kids can make all kinds of excuses. You know, I accidentally fell, I've been clumsy, I've been hurting myself. So there's unexplained injuries. There is clothes worn, like I said, all year long. They'll give all kinds of excuses. I don't feel well, I need to bundle up in a sweatshirt, things like that.
Okay.
What else, Dan?
You know, that's the thing. I'm already getting stuck on like why is this happening now versus in previous generations? But so sorry. What you're saying there is a total, like, yeah, it's the not showing the arms. I had our kids went to the same schools, Thalia, and my kids would come home with friends too, who that when I found out afterwards, and same thing, the clothing choices, long shirts, right, in the middle of the summer and such like that.
Yeah.
But it almost seems like, too, like some kids even they wear it almost like a badge of honor in some ways, too, right?
Yeah, there are some kids who will proudly display it to get attention. That's not a huge percent. A lot of kids hide it. It's an outward sign of pain that they're feeling inside.
Yeah.
So some kids prefer to hurt their body by cutting or scratching or burning or hitting themselves as a way to deal with the pain that's on the inside. Mm. And that pain could be from so many different sources. Like maybe they're bullied. Maybe there's past abuse. Maybe their parents have recently got a divorce. Mm. These kids are hurting in some way. And so they're taking it out on their body as a distraction. Mm. Like, do you remember when we were growing up, like sometimes if you had to get a needle in your shoulder, like when you're in school, and your parents taught you, well, you should really just pinch your other arm, just pinch it really tight, and you focus on the pinching so you don't feel the pinch of the needle. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the idea, is that you're taking away the emotional pain by focusing on your physical pain.
Yeah. Are there any other ways besides physical, like hiding your body physically, is there any other ways that parents could say, hey, there's something wrong with my kid, there's something up with the way they're acting, like how do they act?
I would start watching for signs that they're different than they were before. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're not sleeping very well. Maybe they're not eating very well. Maybe they've dropped out of some hobbies or interests that they previously really cared about. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't want to go to youth group anymore. Maybe they don't want to go to soccer or dance or whatever anymore. Maybe they're sullen or staying in their room a lot more. Maybe they're not involved with their friends. Like, you kind of have to watch everything about them. And when the warning starts to pop up, then you want to take note.
Mm-hmm. And that's difficult because as you're describing those things, every parent's going, that's my teenage child.
Yeah.
Like right there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's difficult. Well, you know, how do you discern whether there's normal teenage angst?
Well, and I would say that every teenager is dealing with some inner pain. I don't know that there is a teenager that has no internal pain, right? And so then a parent, or if they're living it with their grandparents or aunts and uncles, I'd say, please then ask them, what's going on? Like, how are you doing these days, really? Like, how's it going with your friends? What's good at school? What's difficult at school? Like, start to get a glimpse of their inner world. Because when you really dive into a kid, a teenager's inner world, they will start to open up to someone that really cares and takes the time with them. Mm. And if you take the time with a kid and you start to understand their world and listen to their pain, then usually the physical, the cutting and the hitting and all that, will decrease. Because they need to get out that emotional pain. And the thing is, we often think, they shouldn't feel that way because it's really not that big a deal. But to that kid, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It might be something that we would consider minor, but to that kid, now for some even, you think some kids are really perfectionistic. Like they want to get like 98, 99, 100 on every test. If they get 90 or 92, they might be really like down on themselves. Mm-hmm. And they might start cutting because they are so down on themselves because they got a 90. And you and I think that's ridiculous. You got a 90. That's awesome. No, not for them. So we have to really take each kid into account. What is it in their world that's causing them difficulty? And it might be something that you and I don't think is a big deal, but it is to them.
Yeah.
We know the natural ones. You know, if a parent, if a marriage has recently broken up and dad has moved away, or they have to shuffle between mom and dad's house, that can be a huge stressor. Or if somebody close to them has died, sometimes even if a pet has died. Like, we know those sort of natural stressors, but what are the hidden internal stressors going on for each kid?
Right.
And we'll only know that if we spend time with them.
So how, or do you know what are some good questions to ask your kids without being like right out and say being too blunt or scaring them away?
Yeah.
Is there some good things to ask?
So I'd encourage you to throw away the question, how was your day?
Hmm.
Really dumb question. Too broad, right? What were some highlights in your day? What did you like about today? Mm-hmm. What was really tough today?
And quite often, too, as a parent, if you've worked all day and you're racing home and you're making dinner and then you've got to drive your kid to an event that night or whatever, sometimes when you say, how's day, you actually – you don't want to actually be laid on with a heavy as to something that happened during the day too, right?
No.
So it's also, it's making that time.
Yeah.
And making the time and asking the genuine, having the genuine dialogue there.
And it doesn't have to be every day. Maybe it's two or three times a week. Mm-hmm. Like, we just can't simply ask all those deep questions every day. It's too exhausting. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, if you're kind of worried about maybe this is going on and you don't know it, mm-hmm. you could ask, so is there anyone among your friends, anyone at school that you think might be cutting? Mm-hmm. You might... What you know about cutting? Maybe do some research. There's a great article called from helpguide.org, O-R-G, and you can research it. It's, you can look up helpguide.org, cutting and self-harm. It gives you a really basic rundown on the signs and how to deal with it and all that kind of thing. We also have a couple booklets up in the office. You can come by and get them. It's called Self-Injury, When Pain Feels Good. Mm-hmm. And there's a stuff on eating disorders and suicide and all those kinds of stuff. Yeah. We have resources for you, or you can email me, care@northview.org. Mm-hmm. I have lots of resources, and I'm willing to sit with parents, because I prefer to sit with parents because they are the best counselors for their kids. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or if you're maybe you're the aunt and uncle and you're taking care of the kids or the grandparents, I'll sit with you, whoever, and let's talk this through. Mm-hmm. But we need to find ways to ask good questions like, do you know of anyone who has been cutting? Why would you think they would cut? What's going on in their life that they would want to hurt themselves? You start asking sort of these questions about others out there. Kids are willing to talk about others. Mm. They may not want to talk about themselves yet until they feel like they're going to be heard and it's safe.
Right.
So speaking to that, I would say also, please, in your homes, as many times as you possibly can, say, I love you no matter what. Mm-hmm. I love you no matter what. I love you no matter if you're hurting or if you're had an incredible day. I love you if you got a 90. I love you if you got a 75. I love you if you can't do soccer. I love you if you, you know, you don't seem like you have any skills right now. I love you no matter what. I'm with you. I'm sticking with you. I'm on your side. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to say those things every day as many times as you can, so that kids will start to go, oh, they do love me.
That's good.
Okay, I can confide a little bit what's going on. And they might confide a little bit, and then a little bit, and then a little bit.
One question I get from parents who are in their 40s, so we are talking like parents of teenagers, is why is self-harm so prevalent now?
Yeah.
Right? Because they think back to their youth, right? And now we're talking about someone in their 40s, right? If you are a younger parent listening to this, like Althalia says, she's been dealing with this for the past 20 years, right? But if someone in their like late 40s or whatever, and they've got teenage children, they're going, this, as far as they know, this did not happen when I was a kid. Why why is this happening now?
It was like the one kid in high school that you knew maybe had some problems and you saw some cuts. But if you didn't see it, or it was, you didn't know that it happened.
You didn't know it happened.
Yeah. Now we have social media.
Yeah.
And we have all kinds of TV shows, like 13 Reasons Why and all these things, where people learn all kinds of things that they didn't previously know.
So you're saying, like, when, like, Dan, you were in high school, cutting wasn't really a thing?
No,
Not,
and see, that's the thing, we can only speak from our own personal experience. Mm-hmm. I knew no one.
Right.
And I think really what you're saying there is, it's the awareness, like, once this gets out. Yeah. Because if you go back, if we were to talk to adults and say, well, how did kids deal with stuff? I mean, well, alcohol.
Yeah.
Right? Drugs, you know.
And drugs were less prevalent. Alcohol.
Right.
Sleeping around.
Yeah.
Or just hanging out and not going home. Yeah. Like, people just wandered the streets.
Yeah. Well, and the same thing, and I think a big thing too, when you talk about social media and awareness, is we did not have the awareness and we did not have the communication, right? These weren't, you did not talk about issues like this.
No.
You were taught more to internalize.
Totally.
Yeah.
Just get through it.
Yeah. I mean, when I was in high school, like, this was a problem, but it was a problem for a specific group of people.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know any of my friends that struggled with self-harm.
Yeah.
The only self-harm would probably be more to eating disorders, which I would consider self-harm.
Yep.
But it was mostly just for people who are obviously depressed.
Yeah.
And now I don't think that's the case.
No, there are kids in our church that come from great families, loving families. They've been here forever, and they are experimenting with cutting because all of them have hidden pain, like we talked about before. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what family you come from, every kid has some hidden pain.
Yeah.
And they think, maybe this is a way I can deal with it. And so they experiment with it because they've seen it somewhere, heard it somewhere, maybe a friend has tried it. And then they kind of get hooked on it. Mm-hmm. It can be addicting. So if you can catch it earlier, and sometimes it starts very simply, like scratching. they'll just try, like, they'll take a paper clip and they'll just scratch their arm, you know, because they're kind of just sort of testing the waters. The problem with any kind of cutting is it can lead to damage that they didn't expect, you know, scars or even deeper cutting than they ever thought. So it's not usually tied to suicide attempts. It's tied to an expression of pain.
Right.
But of course, we know that if people keep hurting themselves, it can go that direction where they start thinking that's not enough. I need to hurt myself even worse.
Well, it's almost with the awareness, with a larger awareness, it's almost like the way I think of it, it's like, it's almost adversely romanticized. Right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, it's almost like the whole thing with teenagers. Well, everyone's doing it.
Right.
Right. Maybe I should do this then.
Yeah.
It's just like what they say about suicide. Suicide is contagious.
It is.
In the schools. Like, when it happens in a tight cluster of people. I mean, not like everyone, obviously, but it's like four people.
When my brother was 20, he was going through a really, really tough time and he became suicidal. And one of his friends completed suicide. And then a whole bunch of them decided that they should attempt it. And it was terrifying for our family. Now, thankfully, my brother did not commit suicide. But it's that time when they start hearing and seeing and thinking this is the solution. It's no different with anything else our kids are doing. Like, if they're cutting, they're like, maybe this is the solution. I've got this internal pain, but I don't know what to do with it. I don't know where to go and I don't know who to talk to. And some of them are afraid of ruining their beautiful reputation. You know, they serve in kids ministry or they're on the worship team. Right. They don't want anyone to know that they're dealing with significant issues, but they don't know who to talk to.
So we've laid a lot of heavy on here, so but I mean, the first thing I'm hearing from you, Thalia, is relationship with the kids. If you're a parent and you have you believe your child is cutting, would you recommend approaching them right away? Like, if you actually believe that this is happening, you've seen evidence, or would it be something where they should approach like a counselor first and get advice as to how we'll deal with it? Because if your child is actually cutting, if there's physical evidence that they're cutting, do you recommend that they see a Christian counselor like right away, like get that connected right away?
So it depends on the adult.
Okay.
I would say some adults are comfortable talking with their kids and saying, oh, you know, obviously there's something going on here that I didn't know and I'm so sorry. I haven't seen this before. And can you tell me, how come you're hurting so much? What's going on? Some parents are comfortable with that. Other parents feel completely out of their depth and they're freaking out. Come talk to us at church. If you're part of Northview, come talk to it. If you're part of a local church and you don't have anyone to go to, you can come talk to us. Totally fine. You can send me an email. If you live further away, you can phone. Like, just talk to us. Because we're free.
Yeah.
You know, counselors are expensive.
Yeah.
And so, of course, you're very welcome to go see a counselor. They can be very helpful to equip you as a parent. But they're expensive. And it's a little bit harder to get in. So I would just say, just in practicalities, it's easier to go to your church or your youth leader or your youth pastor. And hopefully they can help you too and say, okay, now we've got eyes and ears on this kid and we can all work together to find out what's going on. Because youth leaders have an incredible role. Grandparents, aunts and uncles, like, I'd activate your caring network and say, hey, grandpa, can you take your grandson out for coffee? There's clearly some pain. Maybe you can reach him.
Yeah.
You know, that's what my dad did. He took my brother out every Saturday for breakfast saying, okay, you're clearly in difficulty here. What can we do? And with our kids, you know, grandparents have been involved in aunts and uncles. Whatever you can do to reach these kids and say, we care about you. We love you no matter what. We know you're struggling. How can we help you?
Yeah, I forget who I was talking to, but they're reading a book, I think it was by Kara Powell.
Yep.
And she was talking about how many adults it takes to raise a teenager.
Yeah.
And the sticky faith.
Yeah. It was a 5-to-1 ratio.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, like every adult can handle 5 kids and mentor them. And it's like, no, the other way. 5 adults for 1 kid.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, and I immediately went to Youth Sense. I'm like, 5 leaders per 1 kid.
Yeah.
That's 1,000 leaders. And I'm just like, I can't. And there's like.
But that's not what we. That, I mean,
no.
That's not what we. That's
we,
not
give,
the idea,
we give one
right?
person. Yeah. We give one person per kid. But I mean, parents, there's so much more, as you're saying, Thalia, that the kids need to be connected with more adults rather than just parents.
Yeah.
And I don't think when you talk like uncles and aunts and grandparents, they don't realize, right? Like, the influence that they can have,
yeah,
and the godly influence, like stepping into,
yeah,
stepping into the lives of their relatives, right? You know.
Right.
So. Okay, so I'm going to say something a little controversial here.
Whoa.
Yeah. So there are parents who are listening who are going through a time where they don't actually really connect with their kid. They don't actually like them. They don't actually understand them. They just want to shake their heads and just run from the room. They don't actually make – so that's okay. That's actually pretty normal. Sometimes we don't actually like our own kids. We don't connect with them. Their personality doesn't make sense to us. Their hobbies and interests don't make sense. Their pain doesn't make sense. That's fine. Then find someone who does.
Mm.
So it might be the dad with the daughter instead. Maybe it's the mom with the son. Maybe it's the grandparent. Find someone who really just gets that kid, who has lots of love and compassion for that kid, mm-hmm, that will take them out for walks and coffees and whatever else. It doesn't have to be you, but you as the parent should still have eyes and ears. You should still be praying. You should, mm-hmm, still be doing what you can. But if you can't do the major load because of the disconnect or the clash or whatever, mm-hmm, that's fine.
So it doesn't mean that parent is failing.
No. And you're not off the hook. But I would say it's okay to recognize that maybe at this time, this kid and you aren't maybe the best fit for each other.
Mm.
It could change. Very much it could change in the next year, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. But maybe for now, it's not the best. Find some other people.
Right, right. That'd be hard for parents to actually hear.
Well, you know what's interesting is they're very relieved. Mm. When I say that to them, they come to meet with me and they tell me that, reluctantly, they tell me there's a clash or a disconnect or they don't actually get, mm-hmm, this kid. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Mark and I have had that with our kids. Sometimes I'll say to Mark, can you talk to this kid? Because it's just not working right now with me. Mm-hmm. And he'll say, Thalia, can you talk to this kid? Or to a niece or nephew. Mm-hmm. We've done that too.
Yeah.
So it's totally fine. And parents just are so relieved that, whew, my secret's out. Mm-hmm. And I'm not off the hook, but I can activate someone else.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It's not, they're just beating their head against a wall, being like, I don't know what else to do. I've done everything.
Right. And they feel like, I'm such a terrible mom.
Right.
God gave me these kids and I don't even really like them
right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's so good. And if you're a parent, I mean, we have lots of wonderful middle school youth leaders, high school youth leaders that would love to connect with kids.
Yeah. I love that about your youth program. I hear over and over again youth leaders that are, you know, stopping by the school and taking them out for like a coffee or something like that. Just something simple. And it makes a huge difference in these kids' lives.
Yeah. No, it is so cool. Just seeing God work in these kids that, God has given us. I was just reminded of stories after story of kids wanting to pursue Jesus and making good decisions.
Yeah. And how the kids light up when their youth leaders around. So we had that Thailand-Mexico fundraiser at the East Abbey campus this past weekend. And there were a whole bunch of youth leaders that came to East Abbey for the first time because their youth kids were doing the fundraiser. Mm. And these kids were beaming, like, my youth leader's here. And they were telling me, that's so great.
Yeah.
Well, I was saying at the parent seminar that your dad was doing the other night, that Ron was doing the other night, I was saying, I was walking around, it was a Thursday night, high school youth there. And I'm seeing these kids, of course, there's that I knew in middle school, right? They came all the way up grade 6, 7, 8. And a lot of them are kids who had like huge attitudes towards me in middle school, like massive attitudes. Yeah. It's like, and I was like, oh my gosh. And I'm seeing them now and they are so well connected in the community. And the thing is, they're living their teenage years. They're living their teenage years and the church is coming around and we're family and we're connected. You know, and it's very, very cool.
Yeah. And I can't think of a better place for kids to go through hurt than in the church family.
Yeah.
So parents, I mean, if your kid's going through this now, it's better now than when they go off to university, they go far away and they don't have this connective sense or this community to actually struggle with these questions, these feelings that they have.
Totally.
And so welcome these feelings. Because if your kid doesn't show these feelings, they have them, but they're just going to show them off in university and they're going to have someone else guide them through who's probably not as helpful.
Yeah, because we as parents love our kids. Even if we don't like them right now, we love them and we want to help them while they're under our roof at all possible so that we build that foundation so when they go away, they'll still call and FaceTime and get in contact with us if there's a difficulty.
Yeah. Anyways, that's the podcast for today. Thank you for joining us. This has been BTW with Thalia.
Nice.
So thank you, Thalia.
Thank you, Thalia.
Well, Dan's like always here. So I don't have to think.
Oh.
Oh, being here.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, so we'll catch you next week.
All right, Luke.